Hi guys, welcome back to Second Act with your favorite podcast host, Bonnie Somerville. How are you all doing? I'm very happy to be here. I am bringing you a guest that is one of my favorite people on earth, one of my closest friends. We did this a while ago. We did this before the break and before the election, before the holidays, before we took a little hiatus because of life and kids and work and Christmas and getting engaged. So this has some stuff we talked about previously, probably hear about the election and whatnot, but we are past that now, thank God. Hopefully everyone's doing well and having a good new year so far. I hope that you are following me on my new Instagram page for the podcast, since Instagram deleted my other page. I have zero idea why. But it is second_act_podcast on Instagram, Second Act Podcast. And make sure that you leave me a good review or a bad review. I really don't care, because honestly, I could take it. Like, I take rejection for a living. But just write something, you know, because I want to keep going, get more ads so that I can bring you more amazing people like my next guest, who is truly, truly one of the most amazing people I've ever met. I did my very first leading role in a drama with her. I was a nervous wreck. This was a show that I grew up with. It was one of the biggest shows in the world. It was my family's favorite show, especially my grandfather, who was a police officer for 35 years in New York City. And I was a nervous wreck, and she literally took me under her wing on day one and told me where to stand and what to do, because this show was such a machine. It ran itself, and it was like, you just get in there and just go. There was no lessons, there was no help, and it was season 12, and I had the honor of being on NYPD Blue with my dear friend Jesse Bochco, who you heard me interview, and it was just one of the best experiences of my life, and I'm honored and proud to have been a part of it. And Miss Jacqueline Oberdors was my partner, Rita Ortiz, that's right, Cagney and Lacey, Ortiz and Murphy. We had the most amazing time working together, and she is such a dear friend and a kind soul and beautiful, and has just been there for me so much, especially last year when I was coming up with my second act. So please enjoy this. I'll stop talking now. The wonderful, beautiful Jacqueline Oberdors. Okay, I'm very excited right now. I have somebody that I love dearly, that I've known a very long time. She's very, very busy. I've asked her to come on probably like 20 times, stalked her. She happened to be available. She was the best partner I've ever had on any show. I'll give you a hint. It involved police work. And her name is Jacqueline Oberdors. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, babe. I love your little
on my name. Did I say that right? Oberdors?
Yeah, you can just say Oberdors, babe.
All right. Oberdors, but it's sexier.
You think?
Yeah. So I'm very excited because, as you know, we were Cagney and Lacey.
That's right.
My very, very Forever. First, my very first drama I ever did was with you.
I'm shocked to hear that. I really am.
Yeah, and I was a nervous wreck when I got that job. And my first memory of you is, you probably don't remember this. My first memory of you is when I got there. So I only did season 12, just for the listeners. I just was there for the very last year. And I showed up on set and nobody told me a thing. Not one person told me what to do, where to stand. And I'd only done sitcoms. And I literally showed up and I was like, no one is going to talk to me. Like, it was like, cause you guys at that point were a well-oiled machine, like doing right. your thing. Right. And I'll never forget. You were so cool. You walked over and you were like, Hey, babe, come here, do this. Just stand here. It's okay. Just stand here. Don't worry about it. And you from day one, you completely like helped me. And it was like that moment. I was like mad girl crush on you.
Aw, babe. See, that's so funny because you did not seem nervous at all. You seemed like you'd done that a million times, which is probably why nobody really talked to you about what to do or stuff. But I know it can be really intimidating to come onto a set like that that's been in existence for so long.
Well, that one was so intimidating because like it's like Dave, my my fiance now. Oh my gosh, I could say.
Background, yes.
When we met, he was like, you know, everybody says friends or blah, 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 blah. He was like, yeah. No, NYPD Blue. Like, right. Favorite,
well,
favorite.
He's a demographic. He really is who watches that show.
Is so. He?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely, because now that he's 50, 50 is old. It's that kind of 50-year-old dude that's, you know, big fan. And I know that's not a secret. Am I blowing a secret here?
No, not at all.
Because if 50 looks like that, babe, come on.
Seriously, we should all look that good. But I swear, Jackie, I got, and also you know this because we're friends, but that show growing up, because my grandfather was a cop and I grew up it was like this big, big deal. And I just was so nervous and nobody spoke to me. And you came over to me and you were like, come here, just do this, just stand here. It's going to be fine, blah, blah, blah. And people don't realize acting, when I came on, the show was like, you know, on its way out. And it was like in at 5, out at 5. Bang, 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 bang. One take.
Oh, yeah.
One.
Yeah. They wanted to be done by sundown.
Right. And I was there going, I'm going to act, you know, I'm going to interrogate. And it was like, oh no, we're done. We're turning around. I was like, what?
Right. I know.
And how long were you on the show?
I did 4 years on that show. So
wow.
It was great. And, you know, I mean, I really enjoyed the steady gig. That was my, that was the longest run I had on a show.
Were you there for the brutal years? Like or had it already gotten better?
I actually wish I was. I think what you're referring to, the brutal years. David Milch was there.
Yeah. Cause Jesse was on the show and he talked about that openly, like how that was just insane and brilliant and creative. And
yes. Yeah. No, I heard Jesse's podcast. It was great.
Yeah.
Jesse's amazing. I love Jess.
Yeah. We love Jess.
But those years, that was prior to when I think just before I had come on, because when I came on, it was Mark Paul Gosselaar. I was brought on to be his love interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was Sipowicz's partner, right? Mm-hmm. He went through a few partners. And so that was the year that I came in. Was, what was it, a year after him or later? Maybe it wasn't episode one of the same year that
came,
I think. But yeah, but the Milch days, that's,
I know.
That was all the Emmy nominated, Emmy winning years of the show, right? Because he was, he's such a genius. And he would literally, I heard the rumors that I heard on set were that everybody would have their script, you know, you get on set to shoot and they would rehearse. And then all of a sudden, you know, he would be like, hold up, you know, and everybody would go away for a little bit. And he would just sit on the floor of the set and just rewrite a scene right there. And everybody had to go away. And then you had to learn that and come back.
I know. And that would be so exciting. Like, cause you know, working in TV, like I try to say to people sometimes, you know, not that I'm not grateful to work, but as you know, you know, that's our job. That's how we make a living. Some of the gigs are jobs, right? And some of the gigs are creative. Like some of the films you've done, like some of those are creative moments. And sometimes it's just a gig where you don't have creative input.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear what you think.
No.
And
yeah, they're going through the motions. It's by the numbers. And sometimes the directors are really just there to direct traffic, so to speak, as opposed to coming to the actor and saying, you know, what they want emotionally from that actor. You're not going to get that.
No.
You know, that episodic, you know, in that world.
So tell everybody what was your very, very first gig?
My very, very first acting gig?
Yeah. Your first professional gig.
Well, my first, what got me my SAG card, if I recall correctly, was a Spanish Bud Light commercial in a bikini on a lake.
No way.
Oh yeah. And we actually just pulled out a box, and of course it was on a VHS tape, which is, you know, I got to transfer this stuff before it goes away forever. But yeah, it was like three guys and three girls. Or was it six guys and six girls on a lake, drink, you know, a beer thing, everybody in bathing suits and, you know, like a few days on a lake of a shoot. It was amazing. And yeah, that's how I got my SAG card. But as far as my first acting gig, there was a show called Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Yes.
And I was hired, I'm guessing guessing it was co-star. I don't even know that it was a guest star. Maybe it was a guest star, co-star. I'm not sure which anymore. But my line was, I'm so hot. And I had to say it three times in different
scenarios. Or physically?
Well, that was up to me, I guess. Oh. And, you know, to deliver it in such a way. But I do remember, I went to that call back and I wore my trusty spandex black dress, you know, mini black dress in my heels and, you know, just said, I'm so hot. And I just remember the guy laughed and I got the job or whatever. So.
And you grew up in California, but did you know like that you wanted to be an actress your entire life? Like, was that your plan?
You know, it was never my plan, Bon, believe it or not. It was just, I always enjoyed, you know, being funny and kind of just, you know, having fun in that way. Like I wasn't super.
You are fucking funny, by the way.
Thank you.
For people that don't know, Jackie's really, really funny.
I think you're pretty funny too.
Yeah, I'm funny. I'm all right. But so you enjoyed it, but it wasn't like a thing that you were like, I'm going to be an actress.
No, because I think I didn't have the first clue about how to do it, you know? So yeah, being born and bred here, I was actually born in Hollywood and growing up, I didn't know anybody in the business at all. And, you know, did little plays here and there. I was a cheerleader in elementary school. You know, I was always the shortest. I was one in the front doing the splits, you know, and all that stuff. And then in high school, I did a play. And then when I went to college, I took acting for humanities credits because it was easier than like a lab class. And so
Did you graduate college?
Well, I got my AA degree, which means nothing these days.
Oh, okay. No, I dropped out. I don't think we ever had that conversation. Yeah. Okay.
But I don't think I ever thought I was going to make a living. I always once I took that class, I was so bad, Bonnie. I was so bad in that class. Yeah. That I was really like, wow, I'm so bad. This is so annoying. I have to get this down. Like, this is so crazy. Why is this so hard?
Well, that's funny. I have to interrupt you. You are somebody that I have always admired. That is so indicative of who you are. Like if something is bothering you or if something isn't like working, you have that thing that you're like, I am going to get in here and work this out. Like you have that. You really do. You have that like tenacity. Like you don't like to not get it. Like I'm lazy. Sometimes I'll be like, blah, blah, blah. You're like, no. I want to figure out what is wrong. Like what's going on?
Well, I guess all right. Well, I didn't realize that was a trait of mine, but I think you're probably right.
It's a positive trait.
Well, I think it certainly served me well. So, but I could not believe how intimidated I was and how much I sucked at it, really, to be honest. It was just, I think I couldn't get over the fact that a bunch of people were looking at me and it was so uncomfortable and you felt so on the spot, right? To be able to, it was a theater, right? So you're to be able to block that fourth wall out and do the work that's necessary without breaking the wall or caring what you're doing. You're outside of yourself once you're watching yourself, you know? So I thought really challenging.
After that experience, like talk about second act. I mean, there's one right there. There's an act, right? There's an act that happens, right? What happens after that, that makes you have that horrible experience and then continue and go, I'm going to do it again.
Well, because of, I guess, the challenge of it. I think I like a challenge. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I love about you. So, yeah.
Well, then yes, you're right. And so for years I worked at a grocery store and I started as a grocery, like a bagger, right? I was bagging groceries, worked my way up to checker. And then I was like, you know, in the office doing the checks, the accounting, I was assistant managing the store and stuff like that. And that job, that was a really good job. And I did it for, I think like 8.5 years.
No.
It allowed me, it was great. It paid very well. It was, you know, union, it was benefits, all that kind of stuff. And it allowed me to go on my auditions, you know, on the side. I wasn't full-time, but I was working at least 20 to 30 hours a week. And it allowed me to do my auditions and stuff like that. And then, how
did you even get auditions? Like at what point did you get like,
oh, okay. So after college, when I did that class that I sucked so bad at, and I was like, I really want to do this thing. I ended up signing up for a commercial class, like how to do commercials, how to act in commercials. It was called Tepper Gallegos and it was in Hollywood. And I did that class, and it was like a, I think it was a 6 or an 8 week class. And that you started out doing auditions, like you're in the class and you're learning how to read copy and how to bring your personality and bring everything to life.
Right.
And on the 6th week or 8th week, whatever it was, they had an agent's night. And so you were, so you performed your copy, you know, for the agents that were there. And then at the end, it was kind of a mingle situation. Right. And that's where I got my first agent. His name was Tony. And he was like at LA Talent, which might be LA Models now.
LA Talent. I was with LA Talent for a minute.
Yeah.
But for people, I said this, Jesse and I talked about this, for people listening that don't understand, like, we come from the age where, like, there was no social media. There was no, we actually had to, like, duke it out in the room, hustle, get hip pocketed. Like, people don't realize now what we had to do back then. Like,
Right. Well, you know what we even did? My boyfriend at the time, who was also an actor, we got, do you remember the Breakdowns?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Okay. They used to come out. I don't know how people got them, but they only went to agents and managers, I think.
Yeah.
Of course, there was a black market, and some people were able to get a hold of those Breakdowns, right, which are the for people that don't know, the Breakdowns are what shows are doing, and it breaks down all the characters they're looking for. And we found someone who got a hold of those, and this person put them in their mailbox in front of their house. We paid that person and we pulled up to their house, pulled those Breakdowns out of the mailbox, because this is before email, sat in the car, went through the Breakdowns and tried to see which roles, which things we were right for. And we would address our envelopes in the car. And then when we got home, we would staple our headshot and resume and submit it for, you know, consideration like that. And I actually and I was very curious to know if I got my own auditions or if my agent was getting my auditions. So we decided to print our resumes on colored paper for our own submissions. And so when I went in the room, you know, when you'd go in a room and they'd actually have your 8x10,
which
was black and white, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, always black and white back then.
And they would look at it. And if it was a colored resume, we were like, okay, this is from our own submission. So we know this is working.
You were a hustler.
Oh yeah. We were just like, you know, and I was very naive at the time, Bonnie, like,
no, but that's like the hustle, man. Like, yeah, that is the hustle.
We were hardcore. Like, you know, I was very all about what can I do to move this forward, you know, and get more activity, because as you know, this business likes to put you in a box.
Oh yeah. We could talk about that after, like, yeah, what they, especially what that. They do to women, but that isn't, that's amazing. You were, well, when we met, we bonded right away about that too. Like, just the fact that we're both hustlers, we're both very strong women. We don't, like, you know, we don't take no for an answer, but like, that's a big hustle. Like,
it went on for years. Like, it was really good. I loved it. I actually got a thrill out of doing it. So that's a great memory. I haven't thought about that in a long time.
That's amazing. And so from there, so that's like 1X. So then you get the show, you get that line on the show. And then what was the next big job? Because you've done so much, but like, what was the next big one?
I'm going to say that was a co-star. And then I think probably one of my, it's very hard to remember the sequence of things, because we're talking like in the 80s, late 80s or whatever it was, or early 90s. I did a guest star on Murder, She Wrote, which I just caught the other night. It was hilarious watching the show.
Oh my God.
Like, on something, you know, how everything just pops up now on certain streaming things.
Yeah.
And it was just hilarious to watch. And for the most part, I thought my acting was okay, but there was this one scene, like, what was I doing? You know, it's just so funny to look
back.
Isn't
it funny? Look back on some stuff and I'm like, ugh. I cringe.
It's so dated too. Not just the work, but just the look or the wardrobe or the,
oh God.
But when acting's bad, that falls on you. You're just like, oh shit.
But you worked. So from then on, do you think, like, was it kind of like bang, bang, bang? Like, you just kept working and working and working?
You know, I booked enough to keep me going in it. And
you quit the job. You quit the job at this point.
I did not quit that job until, gosh, Bon, I don't even remember what year it was. Or I think I know what happened was I was starting to get a lot more callbacks and a lot more activity. And I was working like 5 to 9 at the grocery store. I had transferred out to the one in Malibu. which I love that store. It's now a Ralph's. This was when it was Hughes Market.
And hey, Dave, that's so cute. You worked at Target.
I did.
Oh, I love that. So, okay. So it was, oh, and Vons. He worked at Vons. Yes.
And Vons. Well, hey, you know, I got an acting job out of being that checker out there in Malibu. I met a producer, this guy named Rocco Urbisi, who was amazingly cool. And I don't know how it came up in conversation one day, and he ended up doing a movie and he gave me a part in it, which he also introduced me to an acting coach that I had for many years, because my acting coach's husband was Rocco's producing partner, Neil Marsh.
And we can talk about your acting coach for many years was my acting coach for many years, Sandy Marshall.
Okay, and, so Neil Marshall, yeah.
Right, but that was a coincidence when we found that out when we met, because you were like, wait, what? And your story about being told how bad you were, my story is when I called her because someone I knew said, oh, this is the woman you have to see, and I was temping, and I had just gotten dumped, and my boyfriend said, you have to get out, and literally, my mom was like, it's time to come home. I called her up desperately, and I went up on stage, and this is Meisner, for people that don't know, it's Meisner technique, it's you do repetition, and she said, get off this, I have no time, like, I have no time for you, like, what? get off this, yeah, and why? And I was, like your story, I was terrible, I was completely petrified and frozen, and, you know, like, it was a really good class with a lot of good people, but I was so bad. But like your hustle, I just would not take no for an answer. And I kept stalking her.
Good.
And until she was.
Yeah, said that to you. She knew you were just, you know, there for the first time, that she wouldn't have.
Well, she was so tough. But at the end of the day, it helped me so much, because like you, I was like, no fucking way. I'm going to get in this class, because just sitting there and watching.
Yeah.
I was just.
Oh, my God. I was so intimidated the first time I audited that class. I was so intimidated, Bonnie.
Yeah.
By watching the amazing work in front of me and going, yeah. Oh my God, I can't get up there and do that.
Well, but that's what happened to me. I froze.
Whatever. That's your process. And I'm sure after you froze, then you freed up and became the amazing actress you are. You know?
Thank you. But it's similar to what you said, like your worst yeah. class. It made me walk away like you, so frustrated, like so angry. It gave me so much like, fuck, motherfucker. That I was like, no, I'm going to keep calling. I'm going to get in this class, because I have that, like you have, like, you know what yeah. I mean? Like, don't tell me no.
Exactly. Cause you knew deep down what your path was to be.
And then you worked with her husband, Mayer.
Yeah, this movie called like 365 Girls a Year or something like that. And so he hired me like to just be one of the girls, you know, in this movie. And I just remember one of the girls from her acting class had to audition to be in it and just hated me, was so annoyed that I didn't have to audition for it, which, you know, I've never really been given a job without having to work for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't really have lines, from what I recall, maybe one line or something like that.
It sounds like an Oscar winner, 365 girls. Huh? I'm sorry you didn't get that Oscar.
Yeah.
So after all of this, so you're working. And then.
Yeah. So then what happened was I was getting callbacks that conflicted with my grocery job.
Oh.
But I was so insecure, Bonnie, about just leaving the security of that job and going for the acting without having anything to fall back on, because I was brought up to be responsible, and it's, you know, you got to have a job and you got to, you know, this and that.
Were your parents supportive of you doing this? Cause I know you didn't grow up wealthy. Like I didn't either. And like my mom, as you know, was like absolutely against it. Like, how were they with you? Were they like against it or supportive?
So they were supportive, but I think scared at the same time, thinking, oh my God, like, we don't know how to help her along this path. We don't know anybody in this business. We know it's kind of a crazy business to get into. They never once told me not to do it. But I know they were worried, and they didn't want me to leave that grocery job, because I think in their minds, if the acting thing didn't pan out, I could always be a checker for the rest of my life.
Right.
You know?
Where did your parents grow up?
My parents are from Argentina. Right. And they're immigrants from Argentina who came. I have an older sister who was born in Argentina. And when she was about 2 or 2.5 years old, or when she was around 2, my dad came to America before he sent for them so he could try to, you know, get a home and get a job and establish some kind of base here before he had his wife and baby fly out. So once he got that situated, he sent for them and they came. And then my brother was born here and I was born here.
So that's even more like that is the like the immigrant story. Like,
yeah,
they for sure. he wanted the best for you.
Yes.
And then you pick, like, as my mom said, why are you picking like the one in a billion chance when she worked so hard for me, as you know, as a single mom. And she was like, I can get you a job on Wall Street, you know? And I was like, are you fucking out of your mind? Like, have you met me? But like, so for your parents, I'm sure that was so scary.
I think it probably was, but like I said, they never once discouraged me from doing the audition thing. They didn't know how to really help me with it, but they were supportive in what I was doing as I was doing it. But I think the only thing they didn't want, so when I did quit, that freaked them the fuck out. Like they could not believe I was leaving that job. I was making, I don't know, $15-$17 an hour. I don't remember what it was. And this was years ago.
Wow. Right?
It was a very good job. At the time. And like, I'm 8.5 years, Bonnie. Like if I could have stuck in another year and a half, I'd have a pension from the job. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do that last.
You know what? Maybe you should just give up Bosch, go back.
Go back, right?
Just go to Vons, give up Bosch, go back.
I might. We'll see. It could be my third act.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. I want to talk for a quick sec about our newest sponsor, eBay. You guys know you can get practically anything on eBay, but did you know it's basically the original sneaker marketplace? You can find the exact shoe you're looking for. And with eBay's authenticity guarantee, you know you're getting shoes that have been meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators. They verify the box, logo, stitching, and tons of other inspection points. Each sneaker comes with an authenticity guarantee tag and a digital stamp of authenticity. And you sneaker sellers, you guys are protected with a verified return process. And right now they've eliminated selling fees on shoes over $100, making it free to sell or flip your collection. And by the way, I'm a women's size 9. If you want to send me some, my birthday's coming up in 2 weeks, just saying. Go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. Okay, we're back with my Cagney to my Lacey, Jacqueline Obradors. Wait, we were just talking about something fascinating. I said, like, these are things I don't even know about you, but we have, again, that in common, which we have a lot in common, just our personalities. But that was, I had like a, you know, a regular gig, like a temp gig where I was doing really well and they let me go on auditions and I would sneak out and, nice. But I was doing really, really well. And then I got a couple of guest stars and got into SAG I had that scary moment of like, you know, after 2 record deals dropped me and just out here by myself with no family, I was like, I think I'm going to go for it full time. And it was the scariest, but again, talk about second acts. Like those are the act breaks that people like can change your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you just said, it's about taking a risk.
It is in anything.
In anything. And I know you haven't asked me about this, but I'm just going to throw it out there since you're talking about taking a risk. The biggest movie that I had gotten when in the beginning of my career was 6 Days, 7 Nights.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you about that because... Well,
Ask me, babe.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because we were getting like the TV, the grocery, blah, blah. And my next question was literally you get this fucking huge Harrison Ford, huge studio movie, which I'm asking, honestly, I've never gotten that. Like I've gotten, you know, I've had like little one-liners, but honestly, like, what was that like? What was that like for you? What was that moment? That was like another, like, what was that like?
That was just a dream. The whole thing about it almost is surreal to me, especially just looking back. the audition process, Bonnie, for that movie, they were trying to find that role for the long time. I don't know if it was months or weeks or what it was, but it was getting down to the wire. And I know you know this, when you get in on something, and you get in either in the very beginning or you can get in on the very tail end, is a very nice time to go on these auditions, because they got to book it. They got to find the girl, right?
That's what I was saying. And I don't want to interrupt for long, but that's what I was saying when I talked to Jesse. And when you and I started and you got this film, that was when you had to audition over and over and over, and it would go down to 5 girls, to 4 girls, to 3 girls. And now these young kids have no idea how hard it was for us. But that for you, you literally have to win that role.
Oh yeah. You had to win that for sure. Yes. Right.
So they were looking for this forever. And then you go in
for it forever. And what the breakdown was a blonde, big buxom,
Bonnie Somerville.
Well, did you read for it?
No, but I have big buxom boobs.
You sure do. You do. You have lovely ladies. You sure do. Lovely.
So blonde, blue. Well, that's actually, that's interesting. And this hot Latina comes in and had that happen.
But because they were at the point where they were literally like just opened it up at that point. Because I know they read a bunch of names for that. Mm-hmm. And I was nobody at the time. Not to say I'm somebody now, but I'm saying I was super unknown.
Right.
And they opened it up to just whoever, to send in these actresses and have them bring a spin to it, quote unquote. That was the direction. Bring your own spin to it. So my spin, what I brought to it was the Spanish accent, which is something
that was so hot. Can we just talk about how hot that was? You were so hot. I remember that. Like, you were so hot. That was your choice. You just came in with that accent.
No. They were reading blonde, guys, you know, guys, women.
I love this. This is what we're talking about. Like, second accent. Sometimes you just got to take the biggest risks. And that is a perfect example of having the balls to do something out of the box. I love that, Jackie. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, babe. I just was like, you know, and because in my acting class, that I was in with Sandy,
yeah,
I loved that accent a lot. And it was just always funny. It made everybody laugh in class and, you know, all that stuff. So it was kind of in my arsenal, right? You have this little arsenal.
Like a bit, yeah. Like I have the bits, you know, like the friends, like I could do that bits.
It's pull them a out. Bit, yeah. Or just like in your special skills, right? It's right. Like you can sing, you can, you know, whatever right. It is. So the accent was something that I could do. And it was an accent that I grew up hearing my whole life. My mom actually speaks like that. So
did you leave the room? Did you go... did you have that moment? Like, I want people to know when they hear this, because part of this is about like me and all like my mistakes and stuff. And I love people's feedback, like, oh, risks. Again, did you leave that room going, oh shit? Or did you leave the room going, oh shit, I might've gotten that?
Well, the first thing that got me into that room was, I had an agent, a smallish agent at the time. And, we submitted a scene that I did in Spanish for a dear friend of mine who wasn't at the time. It was actually a job that I booked, one of those freebie things you do when you're starting out. It was a short film called Crossing Over. And my dear friend Wayne Kramer wrote it and directed it. It was a short film that I shot many years ago, but I got a beautiful piece of tape out of it from a scene we shot in the backseat of a truck on a rainy night. I was a Mexican woman trying to cross over the border. And so I had this one scene and I had it on my demo reel and we submitted it to the casting director. And that is what got me in to read for that role. They saw that and just, you know, it was.
But see, talk about taking chances. Like this is like what I'm saying about like second act. Like you never know.
You don't know where something's going to lead. And like doing a thing like that, like you do these things for free. That piece of tape is what got me into that room. Mm-hmm. And actually years later, as a side note, Wayne Kramer went on to do Crossing Over as an actual feature film, a full length feature film. And ironically, Harrison Ford was the lead in that. Wow. And I had aged out of the role that I played. It went to Alisi Braga, but I was able to, he hired me to play an ICE agent in that film.
Did you warn them? I'm fascinated by this because I still, and I've been doing this 20, I don't know, fucking whatever, forever. I still don't have the balls that I said this to Dave. I had an audition for a guest star on this show and to play like a 1920s singer, right? And I know you and I have talked about this personally, where you're like, Bonds, like just you know, go for, like, you know, and I just go for it. But I still, I've only done a certain amount of things, you know, and I still, because I haven't gotten out of my comfort zone enough, and when I did this audition for the, I was so nervous to sing and do like this 1920s thing. Did you tell them you were going to do that, or did you just go for it? Like,
tell
the accent.
Them to do what, the accent?
Yeah.
Shit, I don't remember. Hold on, I want to go back to you for a second. Oh. You need to take risks.
Girl.
You need to believe in yourself more, because you're incredibly talented, and you no, but seriously, you. This is the thing we lose, Bonnie, as we get older, is we lose that sense of taking a risk. It's like we're so scared to get it wrong or to fuck it up or to,
yeah.
You know, but that's what makes you stand out. And when I look back, ironically, I was just thinking about this the other day and how I took that risk. And I was so careless. And I remember I probably have those sides somewhere. And guess what I write at the top of my sides? I write, fuck it. Fuck it with exclamation points, because you have nothing to lose and you just got to go in there and bring your thing to it. Because otherwise you're going to stand out. No, but you can do that too. But so that's what I did in that. So I went in that room and I just owned that room. I just was free. And I thought, I have nothing to lose. There's no way I'm going to get this. So I'm going to make them remember me and I'm just going to have fun. And I looked every guy in the eye. It was a bunch of men, you know, conference table full of men.
Guys, people who are listening, we used to have to do it that way before. We used to have to walk into a room with 20, 50, maybe 100 people just staring at us and do an audition, just so you know. And it's very difficult. So you walked in there and you were like, fuck it.
I walked in there and I said, fuck it. And I had my stuff down and I did my thing and I made them laugh and all that. And then the director, Ivan Reitman, wanted me to do it without the accent. So I did that. And it was not as funny. It just wasn't. And because that accent really frees me up.
Yeah.
Fun. It's super fun. Cause it's almost like, you know, you really take on that character and it's not so much you per se.
Yeah. That's what I always say to people that, like, and you know me personally as one of my closest friends, like, you know how I do all these accents and the Brooklyn this and that, and we've talked about voiceovers and you do a ton of voiceovers, and I had a joke on the last podcast. I got an ad and one of my jokes was, after 25 years in the business, I had to start my own podcast to get a fucking ad.
Yeah, no, I try to stay open and receptive and just, you know, be willing to take that risk. But like I said, it's like the older we get, it's almost like we have to remind ourselves it's okay. You know,
you get beaten down also. And that was part of, like, and I could just tell the audience right now, I'm going to get a little mushy gushy, but Jackie, who we loved each other so much and we worked together and we were like, we used to laugh so fucking hard. Remember how hard we used to fucking laugh on NYPD Blue? We used to laugh so fucking hard. And we followed each other on social media. And this is true. I was having an awful, awful, awful time in my life. And you, like, absolutely out of the blue, reached out to me. And you were like, what's going on with you? What's going on, girl? And I say this that truly, and I'm going to get emotional, but truly, like, everything was so bad. And then you had a movie at Sundance. And you were like, what are you doing? I was like, nothing. And you were like, come with me. Just come with me, be my date, because your husband had to stay home with your kids. And you were like, girl, you got to fucking, and you were like, what is going on with you? And gave me this tough love. And I truly believe that your energy changed my whole, like everything. And then I met love of my life but you were like, what is going on with you? You just knew it.
I, you know, we had, you know how it is. You lose touch a bit. There's certain people you work with and you just want them in your lives forever. And then time goes on maybe years go by, you don't talk and stuff. And, you know, that happened with us a bit, and we had lost contact, but it's years went by and we just picked up from where we left off. Bonnie, I did not know that you were going through a rough time like that. Certainly not on the surface, maybe subliminally or energetically. Like
but the universe works like,
yeah,
you know, you were like, what's going on with you based on my posts and all my quotes. And you were like, come with me to Sundance. And that was, well, before.
You know, listen, I'm so grateful you came with me. I think we had a great time until we both got sick. But, you know, you were such a blast, Bonnie. We had never done anything like that together. And
but it was like we didn't miss a beat because it was.
No, exactly.
Wait, I want to talk about the Palm Springs movie. Wait. First, I want to finish the Harrison Ford movie. So
yeah,
when you get that, right?
Oh, let me just tell you before. Yeah, I don't know what you're going to ask me.
No, go, what? Go.
No, go ahead. What were you going to ask me?
I was going to say, so you get that movie and then like, and then what? Are you like, that's it? Like I'm a movie star now. Like it's that.
No, not even. But I will tell you, Bonnie, I was at an agency. And after that, it was really just in person that one time that I had to go. It was a long audition, though. I was there for like a long time.
Yeah.
And I left there just going, wow, that was freaking fun. Whatever happens. And I just threw it up there. And I don't remember how much after that, but I got the call from my agent to tell me that I booked it. But my agent couldn't believe it and was laughing through the whole thing of telling me that I was going to be, that I booked the role of playing Harrison Ford's girlfriend because it was so outrageous. I was a nobody. Harrison
Ford, laughing like in a bad way or a happy way?
Laughing like he couldn't believe it. Could not believe that I booked the part. Not only couldn't believe, well, they didn't negotiate at all. They just took whatever was offered because I think it was great it would go away.
Yeah.
But it was literally like, that's all I remember is that agent just laughed. Just like, this is, do these people know what they're doing? You know, type of thing.
So then when you got that, did you think like, okay, and I'm asking this because this has happened to me. Like I've gotten certain jobs that have, you know, mostly all gotten canceled. But did you think like, okay, this is it. Like, this is like, I am okay, like I'm going to be a movie star now. Like this is my next act.
Well, I was shocked as well that I booked it. And I thought, yeah, I thought this was going to be the beginning of, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it was a great movie, but the movie didn't do as well as it could have done. If that movie was huge, I'd probably be in a different place right now, but it wasn't.
So after that, was that like, that must have been disappointing. Cause I know that's happened to me where I've thought this, you know, show is like, I'm the lead, like, you know, and then it just.
Right.
Died.
I look at it as disappointing, honestly, because I mean, it was such a big break for me and it did get me in some doors and I got a lot of meetings with people and things that probably never would have happened if I didn't, you know, book that. Right. So I was grateful for it all the way around. But like and I said,
after that, what was like what was in your mind, like that happens, it doesn't go the way you want. And I try to explain this to people all the time. Like they think and they see us and they see you on reruns and they think that we're always working and they have no idea that behind the scenes, it's like, you're seeing us on TV a lot because you're seeing reruns, like Friends, like people right. think Mona is, you know, and it's great, but they have no idea that that was 15 years ago. And like, I've had so many lifetimes since then. So like after that, what was the next act for you?
What was the next act for me? Well, I did a movie called Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Oh, yes.
It was a supporting role. I remember reading for that. And funny enough, it was, I remember reading for a couple of different roles that they had in that movie. And Gail O'Grady was there reading also for another role. And so I read for the role that she got, and that was the role I really wanted. I can't even remember now if it was a hooker, but she ends up beating Rob Schneider up or something. And I really wanted that role. I thought it was so funny. And I auditioned for both, but they hired me for the wife of Forsythe, you know, who the storyline was like that he had this like, pencil dick or whatever it was, some small dick. It was like a very strange storyline. Yeah. But anyway.
Kind of like my journal, if you read some passages in my journal before Dave, Might have had some there. Yeah, before Dave, yeah.
Of course, before Dave, of course.
That happens all the time. So you get the role you don't want, and that's happened to me. And then, so you get that, and that's another movie. And then do you think at this point, okay, I'm going to be a movie star? Like, where's your head at this point? I'm going to do movies.
I was just driven to just keep working, and I wanted to just do what I could. And I was auditioning for, you know, everything across the board. And I remember—
you auditioning for TV?
Yeah, I think I was going out for some TV stuff, series, regular kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah.
And I remember I had an agent, a voiceover agent, who told me that I would never work in voiceovers because my voice was too nasally.
Isn't that unbelievable?
You know, but then I ended up booking a pretty big Disney movie with that woman, Atlantis, The Lost Empire. And
those are the best stories that I love. Like,
right. It's like when they say, you know, to someone, get a nose job. And then it's like that nose is their singing voice and they end up being like the biggest singer. It's like, no, you can't believe everything. Like you go into a room, whether it's a casting director or a manager, anyone who says something negative about you. And maybe that's the thing that you're insecure about. So you believe them. Or maybe it makes you go home and say, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to show you what I can do with this nose or with this voice. And
you know, speaking of which, I know you and I have been through similar situations, like without, you know, naming shows. We've been on great shows. We've been on difficult shows. We've had good experiences and bad experiences. Yeah. But like, I've been on a couple of shows where, and you know me, I'm fucking, I get along with pretty much everybody, but you and I have both been through every gamut, like ups and downs and shows. And we've been on shows that have been awesome. And we've been on shows that have been hell.
Yep.
And it's like part of like that, like second act and like reinventing yourself as a woman. It's really, really hard to start in this business young. And like, it's really tough. It's really, really tough.
It is tough. It's very tough.
Do you feel that?
I do feel that. But I'll tell you what's tougher is being older as a woman and starting out in this business. If you really want to get real about it, it's, you know, obviously it's all about the youth.
I have a couple of young girls that I mentor from Sandy's class that I adore. And I've said to them, honestly, they're both beautiful. I've said, I would never recommend getting into this business now. Mm-hmm. Because when we started it, the social media thing, the followers, it was really different.
It was different. But if they're talented and if it's their passion, you know, then you shouldn't deter them from that, Vaughn, right? Because this was your passion. It was my passion. And we've been able to make a living at it. And I mean, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't go back. I've had some bad experiences, definitely. But, you know, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't go back. So for the youth today, it's a different animal for sure. With all the social media. And I guess they look at all that, the followers, and I guess producers are looking at your page and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was just really different when we were younger. And in a way, it's almost safer for young, pretty girls these days because of the Me Too and, you know, all the Weinsteins are hopefully being weeded out, you know, and all that stuff.
We could talk about that. I talked about that with my friend Lindsay. We could talk about that without naming any names. It was like the stuff that was said and done to us, like straight up, like it was like there were times that it was horrible.
Oh yeah.
And I was told, don't be a pain, you know, be quiet. You're lucky to be there.
Oh, I was told if you don't take your shirt off, you'll never work in this town. You know, stuff like that, like in a producer's office on Sunset Boulevard, like, you know.
Yeah.
And luckily I didn't believe him and I was able to get out of his office before, you know, he was definitely about to put hands on me. You know, I was just like, I'm out of here. And I was so young. I was, you know, early 20s, but early, like a naive, super naive, clueless young early 20s, you know.
I had that on a movie where I was invited on a private jet, you know, to go away for the night with a, you know, a big movie star and a producer. And I was like, no. And they were like, what do you mean no? And I was like, because no. And I was, you know, represented by people that were like, you should have gone, you would have had fun.
Right.
And that was, like, I remember that moment, and there was nobody going, absolutely not. And I was like, what do I do here? What do I do here? You know? Mm.
So you didn't go. You listened to that inner voice, probably told you not to go. It probably would have been like a Jeffrey Epstein type of situation. No. Like, that's the thing. You got to really listen to that voice, you know?
No, how do you think that? Cause you're such a strong woman. Like, people say to me like, oh, you're so tough. You're so tough. And they really don't know me at all. And you know, I have a tough exterior, but I got that from my mom, who was, you know, single mom, you know, dad left, like, tough. I have that, definitely, that like, I'll fuck a motherfucker up. Like, and you have that too.
Yeah, but don't kid yourself. There, like, especially when I was younger, you know, there were times where it gets very uncomfortable and almost hard to say no. I think it's different.
I've had that too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's different now. I do. I feel like there's so much support for girls now, or young women who are, you know, having to deal with this in the workplace or in their personal lives, that no means no. And yes, it's okay to stand up for yourself.
Now it is.
Now
it's okay to say no.
If we had this back then,
right?
Imagine, well, we wouldn't have never worked back then, because obviously there was a climate for it, and it was how everything was done back then. It was insane.
And I was always told, oh, you're Bonnie, come on, you're from Brooklyn, just bad, bad, you know, you're Bonnie. Cause I have that, you know, me, you know, the real me, and then the exterior me. You can handle it. And like, people don't know that that's like a defense mechanism.
You know,
on the inside, you're like,
right. No, it's intimidating. It's terrifying.
So when you got, after all this, like, what was your, like, when you, what led up to auditioning for NYPD Blue?
What led up to that? Gosh, Bon, I don't know. I was just auditioning and trying to work as much as I could, trying to build my resume. Uh-huh. And I remember when I went in for NYPD Blue, I was testing on the Fox lot. I didn't even know that it was a test. I walked in on the Fox lot back there at the Bochco building. I think they made it officially the Bochco building. Yeah. And I walked into that theater in there, and it was wall-to-wall people. It was with people. And I did not know that I was going to be walking into that situation. Now, I guess my people didn't prep me for that. I can't imagine they weren't aware of that. And maybe I was better off not knowing.
Probably.
But I do remember, you know, it was just going to be me and one other actress that they were reading. And I remember when I got there, I was the only one there. And when I was done, she wasn't even there. And I remember being like ballsy enough to say, well, she's not here. It's obviously like my job, or you should hire me. I don't know. I said something, one of those where I was just taking a risk and just being like, you know,
again, that's where we are so alike. I've said shit like that too. And I think it's part of it.
But I've said stuff I've regretted too. So sometimes
Do you have a story that you regret that you can say without names? I have one.
Oh God, not offhand. I'd have to think about that. But trust me, there's times when, you know, I've said something and just been like, just shut up, just leave, say thank you very much and just leave. Cause sometimes you try to say something cute or funny or charming and you just sound like an idiot and you probably lose the job right there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You just gotta, I don't know. You're kind of a no filter girl. I know.
So let me ask you a question. So when I got to NYPD Blue, like, how happy and were you to meet me? Like, were you just going home every night going, this is the greatest partner of my life?
I love it. I love that you love yourself so much.
I don't love myself. I remember laughing with you. Do you remember getting in trouble? I remember, Jax, I'd never had a partner before. I remember us getting the giggles and going home and going, like, if that is what acting is. And also, it was my only, for people that don't know, that was my only job that I ever had that went a full season.
See, I'm just shocked to hear that. I really, because in my mind, you have just always worked.
People think that. I've never had a show go full season except for that.
Well, now everyone's going to know, but maybe you shouldn't have let that cat out of the bag.
Do people realize that I'm talking about Ortiz and Murphy? I mean, if you don't know, we were partners season 12.
Yeah, last season of Unlucky You.
But I remember.
You were my favorite. You were absolutely my favorite partner. I had maybe, what, three different girls, three partners.
Well, I mean, that was a tough show. But I remember laughing with you so hard. I wish I remember. There was one episode.
Oh, I know exactly. I know one thing. I think we laughed.
What was it?
Okay. And I'm pretty sure this was you.
Oh,
okay. Partner. Hold on. Because now it had to be you.
Did I fart? What happened?
You didn't fart, but we were working. We were working with an actor. It was on New York Street on the Fox lot outside, right?
Uh-huh.
We were working with an actor and we were doing a rehearsal and he had this hair growing out of his forehead. He had the longest hair growing out of his forehead.
Oh my God, it was like a horn.
It was like a horn. Oh, and I looked at the guy, because listen, Bonnie, if I have something growing out of my forehead, you better fucking tell me.
You better fucking tell me, dude. Seriously.
So we're doing a rehearsal and I'm looking at this guy and we're supposed to be talking to him about a dead body. And all I could do was zone in. I was just honing in on that hair. That's all I could see. And I'm thinking, of course the camera's going to see this. So I'm going to do this guy a favor. And I reach out.
You reached out.
And I grabbed his hair and I pulled it out of his forehead. And he grabbed his forehead and just went, oh my God, that was my lucky hair.
Guys, oh my God. Oh my God. This is a true story. This is a true story. You fucking reached out and pulled this guy's hair out of his head.
Because I didn't know it was attached to his head. I didn't know it was attached to the forehead. I thought it was just like this random hair, like sticking out. So I was trying to be a good fellow actor.
Oh my God, I'm dying. I remember exactly what it was. You thought it was just a random hair. Anyway, oh my God, that was my lucky hair.
Yes, and it was like his lucky hair. He'd probably grown it his whole life.
Oh my God. And
I pulled it out. And then we could not stop laughing because, I mean, we felt terrible for the guy, but come on, that was freaking hilarious.
And now where is this forehead guy? Because you took away his lucky hair.
God, I remember his name. Do you? I don't know.
No, I also remember.
He never worked again after he lost the hair.
I also remember a great scene on NYPD Blue. And I'm not going to say names, but I'll tell you off the air, but there was somebody that was a guest star. He's very successful now. And he came on and he could not in the precinct, he could not get his line right. And Dennis was there. It was like everybody was there. It was one of those scenes where we were all there.
Right.
He could not get it right. And it almost, people don't understand, like when you're acting and this happens, it's, I don't know if this happens to everybody, but it's like a funeral where you get the giggles because it's uncomfortable. And this person, we all felt bad. And then it just went on and on and on. And you and I were laughing so hard. I couldn't, it was the weirdest thing. It was just, it wouldn't stop. And then Dennis was like, I'm going to go sit down. When you get it right, I'm going to come back. Okay. Like, and this, he's very successful, but we used to laugh so hard. And there was another one time that we had an interrogation and we couldn't get it together, but I had never had so much fun working with anybody ever as I did with you.
Oh, it was the best. Oh, wouldn't it be fun to do it again?
Oh, I wish.
Yeah, we will. Let's put it out there. Maybe we'll create something, right?
I mean, I wish.
We'll find a way. We'll find a way to do it again. But
so
yeah.
what do you think that you're like as far as like acts, like what are a couple of like act breaks or acts that you think that you haven't done yet that you really, really want to do? Like things that you want to achieve.
I want to make, and I haven't written it yet, but I'd love to just shoot my own indie film. I would love to shoot my own movie. You know, there's not a lot of great roles out there. you know, gratefully, but there's a long way to go, they're starting to write some better roles for, you know, Latinas and this and that.
I mean,
you know, I started out, I played, you know, was it on Diagnosis Murder? I was like the fucking mistress, the maid slash mistress or whatever. You know, I played many maids or, and not to say there's anything bad about being a maid, but clearly it's a stereotypical.
Well, yeah. Well, of course, well, it's a stereotype. But was NYPD Blue, was that a groundbreaking thing that they hired like a lead detective, Ortiz, like a Latina?
Yeah, I think it
was.
At the time.
They were ahead of the game for sure.
At the time, for sure. But, you know, again, you know, it was, you know, we had to sign a nudity clause on that. Did you have to sign a nudity clause for
NYPD? I did, and I was very disappointed that I never got an episode. To show
you wanted to be naked, you wanted to,
I mean, maybe just a side boob or something. No,
all right.
And listen, Dennis Franz, I mean, change the game showing that butt.
That's right.
So as far as like other acts, like you want to, you, it, but you'd be such a good director, man. God, because you are so in tune with people. You would be such a good, I would love to work for you as an actress.
We should
do something together.
We should do something. We've got to have the content, right? I've been trying to shadow some directors as COVID just fucks everything up, right? Yeah. 'Cause you can't be around. They're trying to keep the crews, like skeleton crews, or as minimal as possible. But yeah, I'd love to direct.
So do you think both of your sons are actors?
They are.
And they're both gorgeous.
Aw, thank you. They're pretty darn cute.
How do you think, like, was that just because their parents are artists? Was that completely on their own?
Well, not completely on their own in the beginning, because they were very young when they started. We thought we'd give it a go, like with the print, and see if that was something they enjoyed and something that they would work at. And so we got them an agent. They're at Osbrink Agency. They got agents right away. They were both very cute. I remember going in with both of them and, gosh, I think my older one must've been about 4. My younger one was probably 2, and you're in the waiting room and one of the agents just comes out and scoops up your 2-year-old and you have to wait in the waiting room because they have to know that your kids are okay in, you know, without the parents. And they just went in and had a nice meeting, I guess, with the agents. And then they took them after that. So they started in print. And then they started in commercials, and that segued into commercials. And I remember I always checked in with them to make sure they were having fun. And I never told them they were making money all the while socking away the money they were making.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought if they knew they were making money, maybe they would just want to do it for the money. And I didn't want that to be the case. And then, of course, one day they mentioned, oh, you're acting. So you like all that money or this or that. And they like looked at me like, do we make money doing this? And I was kind of like, oh yeah, you know, you make a little bit of money. And, you know, so anyway, so that's how they discovered they were making money at it when they were younger.
That is so smart, because when Greg Rumberg did the show, the podcast, one of the things he said was, if you're going to do this, if you're going to be an artist, you have to have a lot of reasons, but it can't be financial.
Like that desperation kind of. People smell that desperation, man. That's, you're never going to get that gig ever. But I didn't want them to do it for the money. And so then they discovered they were making some money, and but they're still doing it. And I'm checking in with them all the time. You guys still, you need a break? Do you not want to do this? Because, you know, it's a business of a lot of rejection. You'll do a lot of auditions and maybe not book anything for a long time. And especially as a kid, you think it could be discouraging. But they, you know, they're into it, man. They're auditioning for everything, voiceover, commercial, films. My youngest just starred in his first movie as soon as we were like in lockdown during the summer with COVID.
Can you tell that story? It's pretty cool about how they were both up against each other.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. There weren't a lot of auditions coming in at all with COVID. No casting directors, I don't think, were in offices. There wasn't much going on. It was like shut down. Mm-hmm. And this audition comes in for this movie. And it was a audition over, actually, first thing it was a self-tape. So it was like an 11 to 13 year old boy. So both my boys were within that age range. So we self-taped them, submitted them. They both got callbacks, and we did a Zoom callback from home. and it was both boys. And we, before the callback, we got a call from the director saying, "Hey, I just want you guys to know that I've read a lot of boys for this, and it's down to you two. And I had no idea you guys were brothers until the casting director told me." I guess he didn't look at their names. And so he told them what he was looking for in the scenes. And then they had a day or two to digest that. And then they did a Zoom callback with that director and the producers. And they went one at a time. They did a couple of scenes and they both laid it down. And then they did such a good job that they wanted to see them both in person, like a week later. So we went in person, both the boys. They were the only two they were reading for the role. And then given, I think it was because of the subject matter and everything, they thought it would be more impactful to go with the younger boy. So my younger son ended up booking it, but they were both.
That's such a great story though, like that they can be supportive and close enough to like, cause you know, like let's say you and I, you know, we're actors, but in other families, kids play sports or maybe they're both on the football team, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Yes. But it's actually happened before. My younger one went out for a national car commercial and he was in on it. He went in, but sometimes when we take the boys, this is when we were going in person pre-COVID, and we would, if one of us, my husband or I had the kids, we would take both boys to the audition, and depending what it was, sometimes we'd be like, "Hey, do you want to read the brother? He's like, you know, fits your specs." And they would be like, yes or no. So my older one crashed that audition and my younger one was on avail for it. And then my older one booked that commercial.
I think they need to coach me.
But they
do you feel like that's like another, like you have we have so many acts. Like, is that like, well, I know being a mom, I remember when we were on NYPD Blue, that was very important to you. You know, you were like, "Oh, I'm ready to have kids." Like you, I remember. And you were like, is this journey with them? That's another act in your life, right?
Like, totally. So like after NY ended, I ended up I wanted to do something a little bit lighter. And I went to a show called Freddie. It was a Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah,
I played a sister. And we lasted one season, but I got pregnant during the shooting of that and did the whole have to hide your, you know, belly behind a pillow. And
but that was back in the day when we all, well, not me because I haven't had kids, but all of my girlfriends, it was before, it was back when you had to worry like, am I going to work again if I get pregnant? And now it's like they wouldn't dare.
No, but I will say, you know, it wasn't even a thought in my mind how badly I wanted to have a family. I didn't think about the fact that I wouldn't work again. I just didn't.
But see, again, that's all a part of taking risks, right?
Yeah. Well, it was important to me too. It was just more important to me to, you know, there's no way I was going to let that go by.
Those are the best moments. Like you got to do.
Absolutely.
What you got to do.
And I remember being pregnant and auditioning and nobody wanted to hire me because I was like a liability. I was like, had the healthiest pregnancies, knock on wood. And I just wanted to work up until the end. And I was up for stuff. And it always came down to, they just don't, the insurance, they don't want to take a risk. And maybe it's different now. I'm talking about, you know,
14. I remember auditioning and testing and getting down to the wire, Julie Bowen, who was literally hot as fuck, but like out to here with twin boys, sashaying in with this confidence, signing in out to here. And it was down to me and her.
Yeah.
And it was Romany Malco, who was also in our class with Sandy, and Bradley Whitford. And I just remember like, I was so afraid and of like doing anything to mess anything up. And I just remember envying her. Like, now granted she had like, you know, 5 years on a show behind her, but she was just sitting there like, you know, what?
You get it?
I got it. But
you got it. Okay, well, good.
I got it. But I just remember envying that confidence, you know, that like, I'm going to live my life and I'm going to, you know what I mean?
It's a choice, Bonnie, right? Yeah. I think oftentimes we just get in our heads those voices, you know, you just got to like tune that out. You got to be able to identify it in the moment and just get it out. And then put that visual of Julie in your head of what you admired about her, and you have that ability. You can do that.
Well, I remember being told, you know, talking about when we were back in the day, people don't realize I was told like, "Oh no, no, no. Like you're a leading lady, you know, you're going to be this, you know, being propped up, like you're going to be blah, 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 blah. Like, you don't want to get pregnant. You don't want to get married. Like, don't do that. Don't do that. And I look back now and I remember you and your husband Juan and a lot of my friends being so sure, like, this is what I want. And I remember like a lot of that stuff got in my head. Like, I thought, well, you can't have it all. And I missed out on opportunities because I listened, you know, to people and things.
It goes both ways about listening to those voices, right? Like, if you're not strong enough, you could hear that voice. Like for me, that voice that said, I sound very nasal and I'll never work in voiceover. Right. If I would have listened to that person, I would never have done the voiceover work that I have done. So in the same way that if someone tells me, oh no, you're going to be this, you're going to be that, don't do this, don't do that. It's like nice to hear, okay, you think I'm a leading lady. That's very flattering, this and that. But then you got to check in at a certain point and be like, hey, wait, what do I want? What do I want out of life? And, right. You know,
but that's what I always say. I always say to people, like, some of us are late bloomers and like, you know, yeah. I like Kamala Harris, amen. Like she met the love of her life at 49, got married at 50, you know?
It's pretty cool. She's so amazing. I'm so excited.
So wait, tell me one, like right now you're doing Bosch.
Yeah. So I'm shooting the last season of Bosch. It's the seventh season.
And
on Amazon, how do you like Prime Video. I love it. We're having a good time. We're currently shut down because of COVID.
Right.
But we're going back this week. I think a lot of productions are down right now as it's surging at the moment.
Right.
But again, I'm playing a detective, but this time an LA detective, a little more seasoned.
And you're awesome. You're such a good actress, man.
Thanks.
Like, I could honestly, you're so good. Palm Springs movie. If you guys haven't seen it, you gotta see it.
Palm Springs. It's such a fun movie.
It was so good. That's the one that Jackie, just so you guys know, brought me as her date. And we watched it, and then Dave watched it by himself. It was so good.
It's such a good movie. I mean, truly, you know, the writing, everything about it just came together. That was an amazing movie. I love it. I love it so much. I'm so proud to be a part of it. It broke all kinds of records. As you know, at Sundance.
It was the highest grossing, highest selling of all time. Like, yeah, it was amazing.
Right. 69 cents.
All right. That's 69 cents. All right. Now I'm going to ask you five questions.
Oh, dear. Okay.
All right. You don't have to answer them all if you don't want to.
Okay.
Since all four of you in the household are actors, who's the best actor in the house? Ooh.
That's hard.
You could take the fifth if you want.
I'll plead the fifth, but it's definitely one of my two younger kids.
No okay.
question. No question about it.
All right. What is the one role? Like, is there something that you really, really still to this day that you, because I have a bunch, like something that you, like your Moby Dick, like that you want to play? Like something that you just want to do it.
Oh,
a character or like a literature character, like somebody.
Oh my God. I don't know. I'd love to be like a female 007.
Oh, you'd be so good.
I would fucking love that. Or like, you know, Wonder Woman, although the Wonder Woman is so hot. I would never like even
match. You're so hot.
You'd love her so much, but yeah, something like that would be pretty awesome.
What is the thing that you took when we wrapped NYPD Blue? Everybody took something and I took the please clean up after yourself sign. What did you take?
I remember Jesse took the coolest. It was like the 15th precinct.
Yeah.
Sign.
Did you take anything?
I took my badge. I still have my badge and I will pull it out. I'll pull it out when I get pulled over. But I took my badge and my cast chair, which I have.
I didn't get the chair. I got the thing, the banner.
Oh, I took the whole fucking chair.
Well, good for you.
So I've got that chair and I've got my 6/7 chair right here.
That's your studio?
I'm in my studio, like where I do all my self tapes. It's kind of a mess right now because my kids have been doing their Zoom classes up here. But yeah, this is where we do our self tapes and stuff.
I love you.
I love you more.
I love you
so much. Proud of you, Bonnie, doing this thing.
Thank you.
I think it's really awesome. And the fact that, you know, your hot fiance can put it together for you is pretty cool.
All right, Jackie. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Love you.
Love you.
I love her. I got a little emotional there. God, that happens to me sometimes. It's so embarrassing. I'm such a mush ball. Really super emotional. But, you know, those people that have just been there for you through thick and thin and have seen all of your failures and your successes and been there and stayed with you and stayed your friend and inspired you and helped you find your second act or helped pick you up. And that's what Jackie did for me. And I love her so, so much. And God, she has done so much in her career. What a career. And she's still going. Watch her on Bosch. She kicks ass. God, I would love to be with her again on a show. That'd be awesome. But thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that. Trying to be as real as I can with you guys and share as much true honesty about the business and life and what we all go through. So sorry for the sappy shit. One of my friends always says I'm a cornball or cheeseball because I get so emotional, but that's me. So follow me, second_act_podcast on Instagram. Download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, especially on the Believe Podcast Network. And have a great day. I look forward to bringing you more interviews. Okay, peace out. Bye.